Okay, Mr. Chairman, the time is 2:02 PM. It's August 25th, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan, and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the regular meeting of the commission. It's August 25th, 2021. Before we begin, I will take a roll call in alphabetical order so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate that you are present. Commissioner Barry. Commissioner Chavez.
Here.
Commissioner Einhorn.
Here.
Mr. Bidashi.
Here.
Mr. Hankins.
Here.
Mr. Shaw. Mr. Streeter.
Here.
Mr. Winkler. Myself, Chairman Owen Egan. Thank you. This meeting is open to the public and is being conducted solely through the use of electronic equipment due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It will be recorded in its entirety. For everyone who is participating in today's meeting, please remember to identify yourself first for the recording each time you are called upon to speak. All participants are expected to conduct themselves in a respectful manner at all times and not to interrupt the commission deliberations. If the commission believes any person's conduct is disruptive, that person will be placed on mute at the direction of the chairman. Further disruption may lead to that person's removal from this telephonic meeting. When the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll call. I will conduct the roll. First item is consideration of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of August 11, 2021. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Streeter. I move adoption of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of August 11, 2021.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I will take a roll call of those who vote in favor of the adopting the minutes. Commissioner Chavez?
I abstain because I missed that meeting, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Budeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. It passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. The hearing officer's reports are all publicly accessible on our website. The website is found at www.ct.gov/FOI through links on the agenda for today's meeting. I will call the docket. If you are a party and wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it and we will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First is docket number FIC 2019-0582. Riker, Chief Police Department, City of New London, et al. Are you there, Mr. Gray? Mr. Gray, are you there? Is anyone there from the City of New London?
Brian Eastep on behalf of the City of New London.
Okay. Was Mr. Gray
Chairman, Mr. Chairman, it's Pauline Murphy here. And we did learn that Mr. Gray is no longer incarcerated. So that may explain why he is not on the call today. We did not reach him.
Okay. All right. And I'd entertain a motion. Unless you want to be heard, Attorney Eastep.
No, we support the proposed final decision.
I thought so. Thank you. I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Streeter. I believe there was an amendment that was sent to us by Mary Schwinn, Attorney Schwinn.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chairman, so sorry. It's Pauline Murphy. We did send out an amendment. It is not substantive in nature, and Attorney Eastep should have that as well. Simply would amend the proposal is to amend the introductory paragraph to add another sentence at the end that says the complainant is incarcerated at a facility of the Connecticut Department of Corrections.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Budeschi. I have two questions. One, I just heard he is not incarcerated. And two, I don't know, do we have any thing to indicate that he has gotten notice of this hearing?
Perhaps perhaps the amendment should read, at the time of the hearing in this matter, the complainant was incarcerated at a facility. And that language, Commissioner, is just part of, pretty much part of our standard.
Well, that's language. Fine, but I just, to say that he's not, yeah, that's fine.
I appreciate the conundrum there, based on what I just said.
The second question is, what indication do we have that he was given notice in the right place, in the right way?
We have a file here, and just hold on a moment.
I mean, just, I think it sounds like he moved locations or he's, thank you.
Okay. It was sent to the facility, his last known address, and he was there at that time.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
I'd like to move adoption of the proposed amendment put forward by the hearing officer.
Is there a second?
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Is there a discussion on the amendment? If not, I'll take a roll call on the amendment. Those in favor of the amendment. Commissioner Chavez? On the amendment, Commissioner Chavez?
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm in favor of the amendment as it was adjusted to reflect that he was, at the time of the hearing, incarcerated.
Thank you. Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Myself, Chairman Owen, yes. Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Streeter, going to move adoption of the amended hearing officer's report.
Hold on a second. Somebody was just trying to speak. Who was that?
Mr. Berry.
Oh, Mr. Berry, I'm sorry. I didn't know you arrived. Do you agree with the amendment, Mr. Berry?
Yes, in favor.
Okay, great. So we'll add Commissioner Berry. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Commissioner Streeter, but please make your statement again.
Yes, by all means. I move adoption of the amended hearing officer's report for adoption.
Second.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded on the report as amended. I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the report as amended. Commissioner Berry?
Yes.
Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fizeshi?
I'm going to abstain because I'm sorry, I don't feel that the question was answered about notice and that we are confident that we received notice. So I'm going to abstain.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Motion passes with one abstention. Next is Doc number FIC 2020-0315. Eugene Brown versus Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport et al. Is Eugene Brown there, please?
Yes, sir.
Would you like to be heard on this matter?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll mark it ready and we'll come back to you, sir. Thank you. Is there anyone there on that matter from the City of Bridgeport?
Yes, this is Dina Scalo from the Office of the City Attorney in Bridgeport.
Dina Scalo, S-K-A-L-O.
Yes, that's correct. S-C-A-L-O. Yes, that's correct.
S-C-A-L-O. Thank you. And you're an attorney, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you, attorney. All right. Next is
Chairman Aiken. There's another individual, Attorney Satti, S-A-T-T-I, for the Intervenor State's Attorney's Office.
Thank you, Attorney Satti. I didn't know you were there.
You know that now. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else present on the Eugene Brown matter? Thank you. All right, we'll move on to the docket number FIC 2019-0449, Jason McCoy versus Lydia N. Martinez, City Clerk, City of Bridgeport, and City of Bridgeport. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Jason McCoy is present for Jason McCoy and the Law Office of Jason McCoy.
Thank Thank you. Is there anyone here from the city of Bridgeport on that matter?
Yes, this is Dina Scalo again, counsel for respondent.
Great. All right. And I'm assuming you want that marked ready, Attorney McCoy?
Yes, sir.
Right. Finally, is docket number FIC 2019-0715, Attorney Brian K. Eastman, Elm versus President Gardner Lake Volunteer Fire Company Incorporated et al. Are you there, Attorney Eastman?
Yes, I'm still here.
Mike, that marked ready?
Yes.
All right, is there anyone here from the Gardner Lake Volunteer Fire Company Incorporated?
Yes, Claire Howard. I'm here representing the Gardner Lake Volunteer Fire Company.
Anybody else here on that matter? Okay. Thank you. We'll mark that ready. All right. Before we consider these cases, I will ask the Executive Director and General Counsel, Colleen Murphy, to please make some general announcements.
Sure. As the chairman has stated, the meeting is being recorded in its entirety, so there's no need to request that of the commission, and the recording will be made available very soon after the commission meeting takes place. Also, pursuant to our regulations, our argument is 10 minutes per side, and I'll keep track of that for the parties.
Okay. We'll start with the first matter that's marked ready, FIC 2020-0315. Eugene Brown versus Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport et al. Are you there, Mr. Brown?
Yes, sir.
Are you there, Attorney Scalo?
Yes, I'm here.
And are you there, Attorney Satti?
Yes, Chairman Egan.
Okay, so we'll begin. Attorney Scalo, would you like to start?
At this time, the respondents don't have any objections to adoption of the hearing officer's report. I don't know if Mr. Brown has any objections, but the respondents don't at this time and are available if the commissioners have any questions.
Well, thank you, Attorney Patty.
Thank you very much, Chairman Egan. We appeared before the commission, before the hearing officer. We have nothing further to add to the comments made by the city attorney.
Thank you. Mr. Brown.
Yes, sir.
Would you like to say anything?
Yes. Can I ask questions?
Not a commission, sir. You can pose questions, and we may ask them of the other side, but you can't just ask questions of the commission. You're here to argue either for or against the decision that was made in your matter.
Yeah, because I'm just trying to fully understand this situation. The paper that I got in the mail stated that circumstances, the respondents violated a 1.215 GS. Our library is down up here, so I can't get in the library and look nothing up. So I just wanted to further understand what it was that I was dealing with and further understand what was it the record consists of, records of arrest consist of, that I was supposed to get and I never received.
Okay. Let me see if I can ask Attorney Reed, who was the hearing officer, if he would please explain to you at least that. He may be able to do that for you. But sir, other than that, we're here to entertain your objection to this decision, and so if you have any objections, start to formulate those objections and let us know after Attorney Reed enlightens us or enlightens you. Attorney Reed?
Certainly. Commissioners, this is Attorney Reed. I was the hearing officer in this matter. This was a request for records pertaining to Mr. Brown from the Bridgeport Police Department. Mr. Brown had been arrested at one point, and so those were the records that ultimately were being sought, and it was determined that the city had not disclosed anything, and so the topic of conversation at the hearing revolved around the records that were to be released during the pendency of prosecution, and there was a discussion about the statutorily defined record of arrest and the fact that under 1-215, even though there is a prosecution pending, the agency is required to release at a minimum that statutorily defined record of arrest. To answer Mr. Moore's question, the record of arrest involves some very basic information such as the date, time, location of arrest, the name of the person arrested, some demographics on the person arrested, and a basic description of the circumstances that led to the arrest. And so that was the information that they were found in violation of the act because they didn't release that information. And then during the hearing, they agreed to provide that information, I believe, to your representative. So that's what the outcome of the hearing was, what was discussed and agreed upon at the hearing. And that is all memorialized in the hearing officer's report. So that 1-215 that they were said to have violated deals with the disclosure of the record of arrest during the pendency of a prosecution. And I hope that answers your question and explains the report to the commission.
Sir, does that explain to you what you needed to know?
Yes, sir. Is there Eugene Brown speaking? If I got to do all that, but is there penalty? What is the penalty for that violation?
The commission finds them in violation. If there was a request for a civil penalty in the original complaint or appeal to the commission, that would have been addressed. I don't think there was a request to consider a civil penalty. But just so you know, the maximum civil penalty is $1,000, but that is not something that goes to the complainant or anything else in that case. But again, that was not requested in this situation. So the penalty is, in this case, was simply a finding that they violated and an order of the commission that in the future they need to adhere strictly to those disclosure requirements as set forth in 1-215.
All right. So I will have to file this all over again.
Brown, what are you asking? You're asking whether you have to file another request?
Yes.
So I'm not sure why you would file another request. If you want a penalty imposed?
No, I'm saying I'm listening to what he said as far as even if I wanted a penalty, but I'm not for that. I'm just saying I just want the records that I was supposed to have.
They're going to give you, after this hearing, if there's no opposition by the other side to this ruling, and after the ruling adopted by this commission, if it's adopted, then you should be getting the records shortly after that. Okay?
All right, thank you. We can move on.
Right. Anything further, sir?
No, sir. I don't know what the objection is. I'm on your time.
You oppose that you were against the decision? Are you against the decision
of me not getting what was supposed to be given to me?
There was a ruling there, ways you were hearing officer ruled in your favor, and in other ways he did not, but. He ruled in your favor on many of the documents. So are you satisfied with his decision?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. All right. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chavez. I do have a question to the respondents. Given that the order was for the record of arrest documents to be provided, can they tell us when that will be done? Thank you.
But Attorney Scalo, answer that question, please.
Sure, this is Attorney Scalo. In terms of the sort of bare record of arrest that reflects the actual arrest, that will hopefully be sent out within the next week or so. Beyond that, if I understand the complainant's request correctly, that he may also be seeking the arrest warrant affidavit that pertains to this case, it will be after that, if located. At this time, it hasn't been located. I have no reason to believe it won't be located after this hearing is concluded. And we will keep in contact with Mr. Brown and his representative in terms of when everything will be mailed out to him, and there will be no cost for any records that will be disclosed.
Thank you.
Commissioner Chavez, any further questions?
No, thanks.
All right. Any other questions by the commissioners? With that, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I move the adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Thank you, Mr. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the decision. Commissioner Barry?
Yes.
Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
And myself, Chairman O'Neill, yes. This is unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Thank you, Attorney Scalo, and thank you, Attorney Sally.
So, Mr. Eugene Burr, I asked it again about the silver, the max $1,000 for the penalty. I would have to, I know it's not coming to me, but who would that go to?
Well, there's no penalty, sir. You had to make a request for a civil penalty in your motion, and it wasn't done.
So at the time that I filed it, I would have to do that.
Right. You'd have to request that, and then it would have to be considered. And, of course, they would have had to had a violation that would constitute awarding a penalty order against them. Okay?
I thought that was in my second one. All right, thank you. This is it, right? I'm good?
Good. Thank you.
All right.
Have a good day. Next is docket number FIT 2019-0449, Jason McCoy versus Lydia N. Martinez, City Clerk, City of Bridgeport, et al. Are you there, Mr. McCoy? Attorney McCoy.
Yes, Commissioner. How are you?
Good, thanks. And Attorney Scalo, are you there?
Yes, still here.
Okay, great. So on this one, Attorney McCoy, would you like to begin, please?
Yes, Commissioner, that would be fine. Commissioner, there was proposed final decision in this case. This goes back to our request, or my request and the firm's request in the beginning of 2019, January 2019, which was we later filed a claim or appeal to the commission, which was heard on various occasions. I believe under the order that's been the proposed finding that was submitted on paragraph 12 and 15, it was found to be a public record that we requested. Any documents that were produced in this case took nearly a year to be produced, and then after the appeal was taken, there was a claim of exemption. Well, part of the issue, or the main issue that I have, and what I think why this shouldn't be accepted, has to do with the exemption that was claimed. And we had indicated in a memorandum in opposition at the time there was going to be an in-camera request, and the argument is basically the same. And I don't think it was clearly addressed, but the claim here is that the documents should be produced because, in part, they were not, that this exemption wasn't claimed before being given, and then after given, the claim documents must be given a reliance upon secrecy, and that wasn't really the case here. The City of Bridgeport failed to meet the elements for the claim of exemption of the documents and materials under 1-10.5A and B, and the exemption and the elements under 5A and B must be met, and they weren't. And the commissioner in the proposed final decision talks about the elements or cites the elements in paragraph 24, I believe. Financial information given, reliance and not required by statute. And just go to that section to make sure, yeah, it was cited by the commissioner in the proposed final decision. Problem is, here, all the elements are met. In camera review, it didn't involve trade secrets. There was a public disclosure of the amount, and it's impossible to derive independent value not generally known, thus the element under the exemption 5BAI can't be met. The assertion proven by admitted facts in Exhibit I, which I assume the commission has, and Exhibit H, create a problem because they haven't maintained secrecy under 2-10B5A2, which obviously are directly contradicted by Exhibit 1 and Exhibit H, which now there's a slightly different issue here that the respondent, City of Bridgeport, stated basis, and I think it ignores the element. It assumes that the City of Bridgeport meets all the hurdles, and thus the claim, if I'm to agree to this, that they've met all the sections, that it wasn't kept in secrecy. And then there's a slightly different issue when you look at Exhibit number four. The party asserting this isn't even a party to the agreement that they're referencing in this contract, nor is there any authority set forth for that party to make that response. And then on top of it, the response is requested by the city as opposed to this party, and he seems clearly to be unaware of it. And this is respondent's exhibit number four. It should be in front of the commission. Then there's the side issue of Connecticut General Statute 4-1A, that we weren't permitted the opportunity to cross-examine the person in exhibit number four. We had this Zachary Klein, and what his relationship is to Harbor Yard Sports and Entertainment LLC, if they are in fact the correct party. That has some type of privity to this contract that the exemption is being claimed under. So I think that, you know, the information should have been produced to us. It was claimed under exemption, but the you know, as I set forth, there's a number of reasons why it doesn't fall within the exemption. We weren't permitted the opportunity to cross-examine. The stuff has been made a public record, which I or referenced in the public, so I don't know how they maintain it in secrecy if the mayor of the city, as well as other members, have publicly discussed this information. So therefore, I would request that the proposed order and finding that final decision not be accepted. I think that concludes my argument.
Thank you. Attorney Scalo?
Sure. So just to address a couple of the points that Attorney McCoy made. The first point is, I guess that he has alleged that the elements of the claimed exemption, which is 1-210B5B, have not been met. I think the proposed final decision shows that there was evidence that spoke to each of the elements that were required in order to prove the applicability of the exemption. So specifically, there is evidence in the record that the city explicitly assured confidentiality. As noted, that was in fact, the complainant, one of his exhibits that he submitted. There's a confidentiality provision that speaks exactly about financial documentation, if made available to the city, would be held in the clerk's confidence. Apart from that, the city also was able to provide evidence to show that the document that was submitted for in-camera inspection, namely a naming rights agreement, is in fact considered commercial or financial information just based on kind of the common understandings of those terms, that it has to do with commercial dealings and there are financial implications to the contents of that agreement. And then finally, that there is no separate requirement to our knowledge and apparently to the hearing officer's knowledge that this would be separately required by any other kind of statute. So the evidence in the record clearly shows that 1210B5B is applicable to the records that were submitted in camera. There was also an argument that because the fact that such an agreement was kind of discussed in the press and that there were details pertaining to the naming rights agreement that were already made public, that kind of nullifies the entire claim of exemption. As noted in more detailed fashion in our post-hearing brief that was submitted, the commission has found exactly the opposite of that. It was in a similar case that I could provide the citation for. It's Richard Goshdigian versus Town Council, Town of West Hartford. A similar argument was made where because information in, I believe it was a financial report, had been publicly issued or publicly discussed, the commission still found that kind of publication does not waive an agency's right to claim that sort of exemption for the full document or a similar information in the future. So the complainant doesn't really have the legal support in terms of that argument by claiming that certain information, if reported in the press, nullifies the whole claim of exemption. The commission has found it's exactly the opposite of that. In terms of the complainant's argument that there may have been a promptness issue, again, the proposed final decision addressed this issue and sort of viewed that given the complexity of the request in the first place, the testimony from the respondent's witness at the hearing, that the city promptly processed the complainant's request, provided responsive records, promptly notified him prior to the in-camera submission that certain records were claimed as exempt. So there isn't really any separate basis for claiming that the promptness provision was violated. With respect to the inability to cross-examine the individual in one of the respondent's exhibits that was submitted, which was the attorney for, I believe, Harbor Yard Sports and Entertainment, saying we don't consent to the disclosure of the naming rights agreement. I think the complainant maybe isn't aware that the rules of evidence are slightly relaxed in this administrative setting, especially when it comes to claims of things like hearsay. So that wouldn't be, that's not a valid claim that the proposed final decision should be nullified. I think that's addressed, that I've addressed each of Attorney McCoy's points. I do have a separate point of consideration as to an edit that the respondents would ask be made to the final decision. I don't know whether the commission would like me to kind of get into that now or whether they have additional questions for me for Attorney McCoy. So I can hold off or I can go into that, whichever is preferred.
Go ahead. Why don't you talk about your edit?
Okay. So in paragraph 17 of the proposed final decision, the last sentence of that paragraph is, finally, it is found that the city's IT professionals conducted an independent search for responsive electronic mail. Unfortunately, I can't recall the exact testimony of the city's witness due to the length of time since our second hearing, but it's my recollection that the city did not submit any evidence that the city's IT department conducted an independent search for emails in response to the original request prior to the hearing. There may have been some confusion because the city's witness may have advised that they consulted with the IT department or that based on the complainant's statements at the hearing that the IT department would conduct an additional search, which is addressed in footnote 4. So the respondents, just for the sake of accuracy, would support striking that particular finding from the proposed final decision and leaving the rest of it intact. I don't believe removal of this finding would impact the ultimate findings of the proposed final decision, but of course I will defer to the hearing officer on that point. But I just wanted to make that clear for the record and for the commissioners and the hearing officer. And I think that's it for me. So thank you very much. And if anybody has any questions, I'm willing to answer them.
Okay. I'd like the hearing officer to just address that amendment to paragraph 17, excuse me. Harmon?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Alicia Harmon, counsel to the commission. I'm trying to, my recollection, I remember if Deputy Director Coleman testified that IT conducted an independent search, but I see Attorney Scalo's point that with regard to the request in paragraph 2A, after some discussion on the record, there was some talk that the IT would conduct another search in conformance with kind of how the complainant wanted the city to read paragraph 2A. So I don't have any issue with removing the last sentence in paragraph 17, and I don't think it affects the overall findings or conclusions in this case. I didn't know if you wanted me to address Attorney McCoy's arguments, or you just wanted me to address Attorney Scalo's request to strike the last sentence in paragraph 17.
Yes, why don't you address Attorney McCoy's arguments?
May I just comment on this related to the IT information? This is Jason.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
One of the reasons, or in part, one of the issues that had to do with our objection and memorandum and opposition, hadn't completed the hearing, we were waiting to find out, and some of this relates to the IT and other information, but we were waiting to find out what the ruling would be on the in-camera information. So, I mean, I don't think part of the hearing was left open on this, on these topics or information that would be later to be produced. So that's my position on 17 and 18 and the number 4, footnote 4.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, this is Attorney Harmon, counsel to the commission again. The hearing was not left open. This request, I had to read it several times in paragraph 2A through F. And the problem, I think, one of the problems with the request is that, for example, the request in paragraph 2D and 2E, we have this arena for which the city of Bridgeport acts more or less like a landlord. And I kind of explained this in paragraph 15. So there's an operator with the Harbor Yard Sports and Entertainment, and they run this Webster Bank Arena, and they deal with third-party vendors. And so
a lot of the requests, like, for example, in paragraph 2D and 2E, when you read the request, it's actually seeking documents in the possession of the respondents that are between the operator and the third-party vendors. And the testimony was very clear about this, that the city respondents do not maintain these records. So we went through each of the paragraphs in the request very carefully, and it all boiled down to the way the request is drafted. There was one responsive document, and we get to that in paragraph 22. It's a naming rights agreement. It was the document that the respondents claimed was exempt. And so I ordered that to be given to me in camera, and they had claimed that it was exempt under 1-210B5B. So with regard to the claim of exemption, the respondents are responsible to prove their exemption at the time of the contested case hearing. I mean, that's really what the hearing is all about, is why weren't the records that are responsive disclosed to the requester. And at the time of the hearing,
They provided testimony on 1-210B5B. 1-210B5A is a trade secrets exemption. 1-210B5B is an exemption for commercial or financial information given in confidence. Those are two separate exemptions. I think that the complainant has conflated those exemptions, but they're separate. And we see that they're separate in the handling of those exemptions in a recent case called Alco Renewable Energy Limited versus FOIC Commission, which is referenced in paragraph 27. So B5A, trade secrets, B5B, commercial or financial information given in confidence. They proved that the document, based on their testimony, my review of the document, is squarely fit within the exemption provided in 1-210B5B. They met all of the elements. I have the document in camera. With regard to the complainant's claim that he wasn't able to cross-examine the operator, and that the operator, there was an exhibit that said that the operator did not consent to the disclosure of that document. You know, the Supreme Court has stated in a case called Board of Pardons versus Freedom of Information Commission that a public agency has a right to advance a claim of exemption with regard to records they maintain. So it really wasn't necessary for me to hear from the operator. The claim of exemption was advanced by the city respondents. The evidence that they provided to me with regard to that claim of exemption squarely met the legal requirements of the exemption, and the document from which the claim was made was the kind of document that's anticipated in 1-210B5B. So I think that there was a lot of work done in this case to understand the request, but I think when you read the request, literally, which is what I think the city did, and it took me a little while to, read the request and understand from the city's perspective that the city is not going to have, if the city is given over the operation of Webster, the Webster Bank Arena to this operator, the operator is going to correspond with its vendors, but those documents are not going to be in the city's possession, and they weren't. So there was, I think, some documents that were disclosed, no exemption was claimed. This one document that seemed to be the focus of the case, this naming rights agreement, it seemed to me, based on an in-camera inspection and based on the law, which is recently, as of June 8th, 2021, upheld, the commission's decision in ALCO was upheld by the appellate court. This kind of document, it clearly fits the requirements of the exemption provided for in 1-210B5B, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Do any of the commissioners have any questions for either of the attorneys or the hearing officer?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chavez. I have a question initially for Attorney Harmon, and then I would be interested in the party's comment. The exemption is claimed for the naming rights agreement applies to information, confidential information, rather than confidential documents. And so I'm just interested in what the finding is with regard to the entirety of the agreement being confidential information as opposed to pieces of the agreement, and in particular, I believe it was referred to some elements of the deal were in fact publicized, so they were not confidential any longer.
So this is Attorney Harmon, for the record. I think that with regard to the exemption in B5B, I looked through the document carefully, and I think that the entire document is exempt. And I don't think that I could parse out parts of that document because it is a contract, and it does meet the three elements provided for and set forth in the Craven decision and then later in the ALCO Renewable Energy. I don't think that the fact that a naming rights agreement exists is the same as the content of that agreement. I think that the fact that the Webster Bank Arena
is named Webster Bank Arena, you know, and the fact that there is a naming rights agreement is public knowledge. But what that naming rights agreement says, I believe, is confidential, and I think it's confidential in its entirety. I looked at the agreement carefully. So I looked at that contract, that naming rights agreement, as 25 pages, but as one document. And, you know, it was commercial or financial information. It was given in confidence, and it was not required by statute. So I didn't think that parsing out parts of that contract that I saw as a unit would be appropriate in this case.
Thank you. I guess I would be interested in what the parties have to say about that, but I'll also note it states in paragraph 35 of the proposed decision that the confidentiality provision of the operating agreement also speaks to all records, which is capitalized. I don't know what it refers to, but and other financial information. So I guess that's why I'm just trying to understand whether any part of that naming rights agreement could be or was argued to be outside of the exemption, even though maybe much of it was confidential or financial information given in confidence and not required by statute.
This is Jason Poising. Thank you for the question. One of the issues, and I haven't obviously seen the document, only the commissioner has, as well as the Bridgeport, but one of the issues talking about these financial agreements and how they're paying and how that document read in particular, I'm trying to recollect this exactly, but there was going to be some type of calculation. My understanding was that the related to payment under that document to the city from the other parties. So, in that manner, I would say that, there is a disclosure and there's a required calculation when the city puts the funds into their budget, that particular agreement. I don't know if that, if you can follow what I'm saying, but, and that's why I think that this basic public information. At some point, somebody could look into it and say, hey, we're not getting enough money, like if you're a taxpayer, for example, to offset our taxes from the lease of this property that is essentially owned by the taxpayers and the citizens of Bridgeport. So if we were to look into how that was calculated in this situation and claim that it wasn't calculated properly, the city could say, oh, I'm sorry, this is entirely exempt, and you're not able to find out any of this information on the naming rights agreement.
This is Dina Scalo for the city. I can respond if time permits.
Is the answer sufficient for you, Attorney Chavez?
I would be interested in what Attorney Scalo has to say.
Attorney Scalo.
So this is Attorney Scalo. Just to kind of go over, again, this is kind of discussed a bit more thoroughly in the post-hearing brief that was submitted, but there is a precedent by the commission stating that just because material that pertains to a financial document is discussed in the press, doesn't necessarily mean that the city is precluded from claiming the underlying document and all of the minutiae contained in that document for being exempt from disclosure. So, again, just to refer to the Goshdigian case, which is FIC 2005-112, it's a really similar circumstance where there was a financial report, I guess, that was generated. And then at the hearing, the complainant said, well, information contained in this financial report that the respondents are claiming is exempt was included in another report that was public. But the commission ended up finding in that case that, quote, such use and publication does not waive the respondent's right to claim such exemption, end quote. So the exhibit that was
submitted by the complainant, which is a Connecticut Post article, which details that Webster Bank purchased the naming rights agreement for the arena at Harbor Yard. It really has quite limited information, and the fact that some information is disclosed to the public doesn't necessitate that the entire financial document, when there has been an express assurance of confidentiality in writing, it wouldn't necessitate that that underlying agreement would be made public. And as the hearing officer, Attorney Harmon, stated earlier, essentially this request revolves around materials between Webster Bank Arena and other parts. While the city may be implicated or have copies of certain documents, that doesn't necessitate that they are necessarily public. And again, as noted, evidence was submitted to prove all of the elements of 1210B5B sufficiently enough to prove that the entire document is exempt.
So I appreciate that, Attorney Scalo. I think I'm really only focused in this question on the naming rights agreement, and it seems to me that you're arguing that either the entire document is exempt or the entire document isn't, and I'm trying to figure out where in the statute that position is coming from, because the statute speaks to information rather than to an entire document. And I do see the finding in paragraph 28 of the decision citing authority that the exemption does not apply if identical information is otherwise available in the public domain. So I don't have access to the Gashdigian case, but I am relying on that citation in this decision here.
Commissioner, this is Attorney Harmon again. I think that the fact that there was a naming rights agreement was public, the fact that there was this agreement, but I have no evidence from which I could find that parts of that naming rights agreement are public. Other than the fact that it exists, nothing that I read in that 25 pages was testified to or shown to me in any way as having been public. So there is a naming rights agreement. That's what's been publicized. There was an article in the newspaper about it, but the terms, the commercial and financial terms of that agreement, to my knowledge and from the evidence that I saw, are not public information. And again, the city happens to have this document, but it's actually a document between the operator and Webster Bank. So it is in the city's possession. It was given to the city under an agreement of confidentiality that the city could have the document, but nothing in that agreement, to my knowledge, from what I saw at the hearing, is public information. And so I think the whole document is commercial or financial information in confidence. I think it meets the test that was stated in the Craven case and recently upheld in the Alco case. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all from me.
Commissioner, this is Jason McCoy again. I know there may be another question, but I just want to, there was one other comment on the
hold on, sir,
response to the city of Bridgeport. I'd like to just make
on
one topic with.
Hold on a second. Hold on a second. Commissioners, do you have any other questions for these parties?
Yes, this is Commissioner Fugashi. I will have one other question once this part of the discussion is finished. Just to Attorney Harmon, but it does not relate to what you're discussing at the moment, but another paragraph of the agreement, the hearing officers.
Do any of the other commissioners have any questions? Attorney McCoy?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Before I forget, and because we're going into other topics, I just wanted to note, you know, I believe that Connecticut General Statute 4-177C applies related to cross-examination. I think it was mentioned that in the argument by the city attorney that does not apply. I believe it does because it relates to the administrative code. So
I think that that's a misstatement of the law on another party's part in that area.
So this is Commissioner, Mr. Chairman, this is Attorney Harmon. I think that we're making a lot about paragraph 37, where I had a document into evidence that the current operator of the Webster Bank Arena, which I name as Harbor Yard Sports and Entertainment, there was a document submitted into evidence that that operator does not consent to the city disclosing that naming rights agreement. Even without that document, though, the only reason that the city has this record is because the operator gave it to the city in exchange for confidence. It was not a contract that the city needed to have, and the test is made. So the fact that the complainant didn't get to cross-examine the operator, I think that the respondents provided me with that. I think it was an email from the operator that says, no, we don't consent to the city releasing the naming rights agreement. I think the city reached out and said, can we release this, even though you gave it to us under a promise of confidentiality? And the operator said, no, you can't. But irregardless, the city could still claim a B5B exemption, and they'd still be able to raise that exemption. As I mentioned before, there's a Supreme Court case that says that the public agencies can raise exemptions with regard to documents in their possession. They have standing to do that. They did that in this case. And I don't know how I could parse out any of that commercial or financial information in that document, because it's not been publicly disclosed. And so, yes, there is a naming rights agreement. You know, obviously it's the Webster Bank Arena, so the name is there, but the city only has that agreement because the operator provided it to the city. So the city certainly can raise a claim of exemption with regard to that contract. And I don't think that, you know, paragraph 37 just was to show me, I think, that the city reached out to the operator and say, hey, we've got a request for this document. It's your document. It's in our possession. You know, do you have it? Because I think if the operator had said, no, go ahead, give them the operating agreement. But they objected, and the city certainly was within its rights to raise this exemption with regard to that document.
Commissioner, this is Jason McCoy again. I just note that Exhibit G, paragraph 7.6, was 2,000 documents. This other stuff relates to something different. There seems to be no connection, or at least I would try to figure out what the connection is to this other document, because there would have to be some type of assignment, and that's why I bring up the issue of trust or whoever was involved with that naming rights document, which the exemption that they're claiming is under a document from 2000 as opposed to 2011.
Right, because the former operator, this is Attorney Harmon. The operating agreement was originally between another operator and a third party, and that operating agreement got assigned to the current operator. So the current operator now stands in the shoes, if not mistaken, of the former operator that executed that agreement, and that agreement is in the possession of the city, the respondent cities. So the current operator is now assigned that operating agreement. So that's how, and that's why they reached out to Harbor Yard Sports and Entertainment, because now they are the current operator.
But I haven't received the assignment.
Well, I don't have the assignment. I don't have, maybe Attorney Scalo can address that. I don't have an actual document assigning it.
All right,
There's a lot of back.
Which is the reason why I brought the
coin. There's a lot of back and forth. It should be going through the chair.
So through you, I apologize, Commissioner. I'm sorry.
Have any further questions?
That was the, Commissioner, through the chair, that was the reason why I brought up the cross-examination and some of the other issues related to that, because, you know, either I haven't crossed them or I don't have the assignment.
Thank you. I know Commissioner Fajessi had a question.
I do have a question just on paragraph 31. And we'd like to suggest to Attorney Harmon that she might be open to a slight wording change. This is a paragraph that purports to give a definition of the term given in confidence, generally speaking definition, not and the middle clause says, given in confidence, such as where there is an express or implied assurance of confidentiality. And I'd like to suggest adding assurance or intent of confidentiality to that language, if she would be open to that.
Attorney Herman, I don't have any objection to adding implied assurance or intent of confidentiality. I think that I did take this language from one of the cases. It's not an exact quote, but I think this has been defined before, but I don't think adding the language that Commissioner Fuzeshi wants to add would change it in any significant way, so that would be fine with me.
Thank you.
Would you like to make a motion to Commissioner Fuzeshi regarding that modification?
Well, if you require a motion, or if Attorney Harmon's agreement is sufficient, then when we vote on the whole, the whole hearing officer's report would be already there, just like we've done with other wording changes. It's up to you, sir. Up to you, Mr.
Attorney Murphy.
I think that's slightly more substantive, so perhaps an amendment might be appropriate for that one.
Can I entertain a motion, Commissioner Fuzeshi?
I'd like to make a motion to add into paragraph 31 after the word assurance or intent.
Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I'll second.
Motion's been made and seconded to amend. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call a roll.
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chabet. I'm not quite understanding why that's necessary for this case, and it seems to change an important the language of an important standard. So I just want to understand that better before we vote.
I mean, it's going to change anything.
So Commissioner, our attorney, Harmon. Attorney Harmon, can you answer Commissioner Chavez's question?
I was trying to look where I got this quote from. The definition of given in confidence, and I'm pretty sure that it's our definition. So our definition in the ALCO case, which was adopted by the appellate court. So on second thought, perhaps we should amend paragraph 31, because I think that this definition of given in confidence has been accepted and reiterated by the appellate court in the ALCO Renewable Energy Limited case that just issued on June 8th, 2021. So I don't know if we should add or intent, because the appellate court didn't say or intent. So I think I have to count my former comments a little bit.
Based on that, I would be, if you say this is the exact language from that case, I just don't want to make law here based on a case we had recently. So if that's the case language that you're quoting there, and we're not changing the case language, then I would withdraw my motion, assuming Commissioner Streeter has agreed to withdraw in his second.
From Mr. Streeter, I withdraw my second.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any further discussion among the commissioners regarding this matter? Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Chavez, because I had a number of questions, I just want to indicate I do support this decision and I will vote accordingly. And I just want to explain that I read, in light of what Attorney Harmon has said, I read paragraph 34, where it refers to a commercial or financial record, as really saying that this whole record is imbued with, this whole document, the naming rights agreement, is so imbued with commercial or financial information that, as Attorney Harmon said, can't really be parsed out, that it does meet the statutory exemption. So I understand that finding better now in light of the discussion, and I do support this decision.
Thank you. Any further comments or discussion questions regarding this hearing officer's report from the commission? All right, with that, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner, thank you, sir.
You're still on the air, Commissioner. I mean, Attorney Harmon.
Okay, there's been a lot of interruptions. We have a motion by Commissioner Streeter to accept the hearing officer's report. Is there a second?
Yes, Commissioner Hankins, second.
Okay, is there discussion on the motion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of the hearing officer's report. Commissioner Barry?
Yes.
Commissioner Chavez?
Yes.
Commissioner Einhorn?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Attorney McCoy. Thank you, Attorney Scala.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Next is docket number FIC 2019-0715, Attorney Brian K. Estep and Town of Salem versus President Gardner Volunteer Fire Company Incorporated, et al. Are you there, Attorney Estep?
Yes, I am.
Are you there, Attorney Howard?
Yes, I'm here.
Is there anyone else there in relation to this case? Okay. So, Attorney Howard, you represent the Volunteer Fire Company, correct?
Yes, I do.
Okay, would you like to begin?
Mr. Chairman, before you let Attorney Howard proceed, this is Attorney Harmon, counsel to the commission. I have two small amendments that I'd like to offer to the commission before the parties start, if I might. Paragraph 27, it's just really, this is really for clarification. Paragraph 27 says, it is concluded that the respondents did not violate the FOI Act when they declined to disclose such records to the complainants. I want to take out such records and say the attachments referred to in paragraph 26 above. Just so it's clear, I'm talking about the attachments that were referred to in paragraph 26. So that paragraph would now read, it is concluded that the respondents did not violate the FOI Act when they declined to disclose the attachments referred to in paragraph 26 above to the complainants. That is the first, because I think it's a little bit difficult to read without that clarification.
Read and that again, please. Paragraph 27, right?
Paragraph 27 would now read, such records would be removed, and it would read, it is concluded that the respondents did not violate the FOI Act when they declined to disclose the attachments referred to in paragraph 26 above to the complainants. Just so it's clear that I'm talking about the attachments in paragraph 27 that are referred to in paragraph 26. And then I have one more small amendment. In paragraph 29, where it the third to the last sentence, it ends on the word memory aid. I would like to add the following clause. So it would be memory aid. This would be the new part, quote, and that such records are not completed documents. I just want to add that clause to that sentence. So that sentence would now read, it is found that Ms. Filipina takes such notes during the public meetings of the respondent fire companies and of the fire company's board of directors meetings as a personal memory aid, and here's the new part, and that such notes are not completed documents.
those are the two amendments that I'd like to offer. I don't think it changes the outcome of the case or significantly changes how I get there, but I think it adds some clarification to the report itself. And thank you, commissioners.
Thank you. I entertain a motion regarding those two amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we consider the amendments as proposed by the hearing officer.
Is there a second? Is there a second?
I would second that, Commissioner Fugnesi.
Thank you. Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion on the amendments? Okay, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of this amendment or these amendments. Those in favor, Commissioner Barry?
Yes.
Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn? Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fugnesi?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Hank?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
Myself, Owen Egan, yes. The amendment passes unanimously. All right. We'll go back to the parties and ask them to begin. So, Attorney Howard, would you like to begin, please?
Yes. So, in reviewing the preliminary proposed final decision, we only have one concern, which is trying to find a specific paragraph, but it's base numbers 2019-0715-129 through 130. So two specific pages that we had submitted for an in-camera review and asserted the exemption, attorney-client privilege exemption. Our concern is in reviewing those two pages, it's by the words used in these two pages of documents, it's clearly a message that was communication between an attorney and a consultant, and then that communication was then forwarded to the clients for their consideration. And we would contend that that is, in fact, protected by the attorney-client privilege. And in fact, those sort of phrases are used in the communications. So we were concerned about those particular pages being disclosed. Other than that, we do not contest anything else in the proposed 129 through 130.
Mr. Chairman, this is Attorney Harmon. I'm going to go pull the in-camera record so I can look at those two pages, if you don't mind.
Thank you. Attorney Murphy, should we wait for Attorney Harmon to return?
Yes, I think that would be a good idea. So, I mean, I suppose you could proceed with the argument. Wanted.
You want Attorney Howard to repeat her argument?
No, I was suggesting if there's additional argument, I think you could proceed with that while Attorney Harmon looks that up for us.
So I'm going to turn to Attorney Eastep, and I'll ask him what his argument is. I didn't know if Attorney Harmon needed to hear it.
Why don't we hold for a moment then? He's nearby. One moment.
Commissioner Chavez, I'm not seeing the paragraphs of the decision. Has anybody found it? Because I'm just trying to look for the paragraphs that address those two pages.
I think these are in-camera documents that she identified, not paragraphs.
That's correct. And so in the proposed ruling, it specifically deals with documents, page numbers that are to be, that are exempt from disclosure. So I'm talking about one document, page numbers for documents that are have been ruled to not be exempt from disclosure.
Okay, thank you.
So I don't know if you want to address those two pages now, or do you want to have Attorney Eastep
respond, and then I'll respond to Attorney Howard after, or how would you like me to handle this?
I was going to let Attorney Estep go, but what's your pleasure?
That's fine.
All right. Attorney Estep?
Good afternoon. Obviously, I can't respond to Attorney Howard's question on some of these documents because I don't know what they are because I haven't seen them. But on the decision itself, the only concern that the town of Salem has is in the decision on paragraph 48, where we have requested that actions taken by the respondents be voided for failure to properly post their agendas and their minutes. I've not reviewed the hearing report, the hearing tape on this, but it was my recollection that the president of the Gardner Lake Volunteer Fire Company confirmed that they do not post their agendas anywhere and had not posted their agendas anywhere, nor had they done the same with their minutes in any public places. So I'm concerned that they continue to hold, in essence, meetings without the public having access to the meetings and what went on at the meetings. And in the past, I know that this commission has found that such meetings, then actions taken during them, needed to be voided under those circumstances. And that's our only concern with the draft decision.
Okay, this is Attorney Harmon. So I'll respond to Attorney Howard first. I'm looking at, and I want to make sure, it's 2009-0715-129 and 130. Is that correct?
I'm pulling it up now. Somehow our page numbers are a little weird. It's 129 through 132. I'm sorry. It actually, my copy is skipping pages.
Okay. So 132. Well, I can only address, I can, this is Attorney Harmon. So with regard to document 2019 in camera record, 2019-015-129. I can't find that this is an attorney-client privilege document because there's not a request for legal advice and there's not a provision of legal advice in this document in any way. You know, the information, which is really just three sentences, speaks to information that wasn't testified to, but clearly on its face, this is not a client saying, hey, I have a problem with this, can you help me? Or an attorney saying, here's the answer to your problem. So that document 129 is not privileged. Document 130 and 131 is a letter, right? It's a letter, but it doesn't have an attorney on it anywhere. So it's between two public officials. So I can't find that that's a privileged document because it's just one public official writing to another public official. And document 132, is not between the client and the attorney. So again, I don't have a request for legal advice. I have an attorney speaking to a third party. So I can't find under the standards set forth in paragraph 36, which is the standard in Connecticut General Statute 52-146R, subsection 2, I can't find that that's privileged because there's no request for legal advice and there's no provision of legal advice. With regard to Attorney Estep's request that everything that was done at these meetings be voided, I just want to remind the commission that in the early stages of this case, I think that the Gardner Lake Volunteer Fire Company was under the impression that it was not a public agency. It had limited experience with FOI. They came around to the fact that they were, with regard to their, you know, substantive fire activities, going to be responsible to have public meetings and keep minutes and go through all the requirements of the FOI Act. They did not understand that, and I think that's why they communicated with Attorney Howard. They did their best to catch up to that reality, and I did order that that we provide them in the third part of the order with some training because they were so kind of far away from the idea of being a public agency in certain respects and having to comply. But I think it would be, you know, unfair. They did give the minutes and the agendas over. So I think to, you know, be draconian and say, we're going to just void everything you did when you didn't understand, you know, really your legal requirements. I think that would be a little bit harsh. I think it's better to recognize that they were under the impression that they did not have to comply, that very soon after apparently getting in touch with Attorney Howard, they understood that they did have to comply. They did their very best to comply, and we're going to get them some education so that they can get even better at understanding and managing their obligations under the Freedom of Information Act. But I would not recommend that we void anything if they missed a minute or an agenda. I think that they were able to gather most of them up if they had prepared them. So the ones that they maintained, they did disclose. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Herman. Any other questions for Attorney Herman? Any further discussion or questions by the commissioners? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the amended hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor of adopting the hearing officer's report. Commissioner Barron?
Yes.
Mr. Chabay?
Yes.
Mr. Einrich?
Yes.
Mr. Tuzeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan? Yes. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Attorney Howard. Thank you, Attorney Seth.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. We are moving on, Colleen, to consideration of the Superior Court decision.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I will ask Attorney Reed to report on that matter, which, just generally speaking, is upheld the Commission's decision regarding records held by the Madison Police Department, where there was a claim that disclosure would harm the future. Future matter. I'll let Matt address that a little further.
Thank you. This is Matthew Reed. I represented the commission in the matter of Drum versus Freedom of Information Commission.
You muted, Matt?
Of course I am. Okay, thank you very much. It's Attorney Matthew Reed. I represented the commission in Drum versus Freedom of Information Commission. This was a case in which Commissioner Streeter served as the hearing officer. This was a request for the investigative files relating to a murder investigation that was conducted by the Madison Police Department. The commission rendered a final decision back on 8/26/2020, in which they ordered the release of all of the investigative records to the requester. The requester then appealed that decision on December 23rd, 2020, and it was heard by the court on April 16th, 2021. The court ultimately upheld the commission's decision. The topic that was argued dealt with the exception that allows law enforcement records that deal with, that would be prejudicial to a prospective law enforcement action are not subject to disclosure. And so the court ultimately asked the question, how probable must a prospective law enforcement action actually be to satisfy the law enforcement exception? So the court articulated seven particular specific factors that the commission should look for when hearing a case, and the burden that has to be met by an agency that claims this particular exemption. And we find those to be very helpful in the future when these cases are prepared by respondents, when we hear these cases as hearing officers. So it is a decision in support of the commission's decision, and they have 20 days to appeal. So we would look for an appeal somewhere in the middle of the first week of September if it were to be appealed by the town of Madison. So that was a favorable outcome for the commission, and we'll stand by and let you know if it's appealed to the appellate level. And I'll certainly answer any questions anyone may have. Thank you very much.
Thanks, and I think the legal staff is certainly happy with that decision because it does give us some good standards to apply when looking at that particular exemption. So we're certainly hopeful that it will stand, but we recognize that the town may appeal it. We'll see what happens. Thanks, Sam. Under pending appeals, I don't have too much to report other than there are a couple of appellate court arguments around the bend. One is involving the town of Avon and Mr. Godoy, and that will be handled by attorney Matt Reed. That's coming up in September, right, Matt?
That's correct, yes.
And then the other one is at the Supreme Court involving the Department of Banking. I think it's Mr. Warren. That case, the commission had gotten a favorable decision from the lower court, and the Supreme Court has taken that case, and attorney Alicia Hartman is preparing to argue that within the next couple of weeks, I think, in September. So, have some action in the appellate courts coming up. Other than that, no new pending appeals or anything, so we'll move on to the director's report. Not too much new there. I'll just follow up from our last meeting and let you know that we're moving forward with the purchase of that software that will enable the commission to expand its hearing capacity, so and we're hopeful that we'll have that operational in September sometime. Depending upon how fast we can purchase it and get it up and running and get some hearings scheduled. Second, last time I had reported about this mission called the ACIR, Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, that was tasked following this legislative session with looking at the remote meetings provisions that had the ones that had passed last session and also looking to see if more should happen with regard to conduct of remote meetings. And that group has now, or is officially scheduling their meeting to confer with us and the commission and others on that front. And that's going to take place in next week, we hope. And again, as we've said, those provisions that were passed last session, they expire in April. So we're thinking that this body will help move language forward for the next legislative session that might amend some of the existing law that I have on that. Commissioner Pisashi, did you have a question?
Yes, I just wanted to follow up for 1 second on the Drum versus FYC case. I think it's, I'm sure you're going to be doing this, but it is a significant case, and it does call a significant, lengthy, and significantly reasoned, but also calls for a call of the General Assembly or people, General Assembly, to start thinking about some statutory changes. And should that develop, I assume we will be watching it and thinking about it. So I just wanted to really put that on our checklist because this is a significant decision, extremely well reasoned, but also actually asks the appellate courts to look at it. There's a pathway for that, and ask the General Assembly to look at not only the specific provision involved here, that is a specific question of cold cases, but some of the fundamental structures of the FOIC Act. So I really think it's we should add it to careful watch under our legislative watch.
Absolutely.
And thought and preparation for it so that, yeah, it just, it's it's a case that is very noteworthy and, of course, affirmed, but it's important, I believe, looking forward. Important things may or may not come from it looking forward.
Thank you.
I agree. We will be looking with an even more keen eye this legislative session and out for that topic and probably talk to the legislature ourselves about it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So the last item, I think, for me to report, just under staff reports, we're having our second round of interviews this week with our candidates for the staff attorney chief position. And no legislative report, no new business for you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Streeter, I move adoption that we adjourn today.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
I'll take a roll call on the motion to adjourn. Commissioner Barry?
Yes.
Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Mr. Einhorn?
Yes.
Mr. Fizeshi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And Owen Egan, yes. Thank you all. Great job today, staff. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.